5:03 in the Fast Lane. Your time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers, an officially licensed Rolex jeweler. BT is in Pittsburgh. So we've got Brad Barnes, Chris Ronji, Randy Carricker with you. And Take It or Leave It coming up in a moment. Send in your text to the Hot Shots text line at 65780. Before we get to Teoli, they say one man's trash is another man's treasure. And a former NASA intern has proven that to be true. In 1976, Gary George was a student at Lamar University and landed an internship at NASA. During a government auction, he bought a collection of old tapes for $218. Years later, those tapes turned out to be pretty important. According to Sotheby's auction, the video is the earliest, sharpest, and most accurate surviving video images of man's first steps on the moon. At a recent auction, the tape sold for $1.82 million. Hmm. That's more than 8,000 times what George paid for it in 1976.
Damn.
Good for him.
So it's a video of a moment that never happened?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Because we all know that's a hoax. Well,
the fact that it's in HD tells you something, doesn't it?
Yeah, but, you know, it's those can be doctored.
Ronji, we talked about it earlier in the Hot Topics of the Day. NFL running back Adrian Peterson reportedly has lost more than $100 million that he's earned because he trusted the wrong people. Take it or leave it. You, Chris Ronji, could spend and lose more than $100 million.
I'll take it. I wouldn't, but I could.
I don't think you could. I think you'd be too responsible.
What was the movie with Richard Pryor? Brewster's Millions.
Yeah, Brewster's Millions. He had to spend it in 24 hours.
In order to get like an extra 30 or so, mm-hmm. or something like that. Yeah. I forgot how that worked. But if somebody gave it to me, I think I could do it.
But you'd have to try. He clearly wasn't trying to go broke.
No. But what I do, I buy a home, the biggest home I can find. I would buy a huge boat that I have no business owning, multiple cars. You can get to 100 mil pretty quickly, I think.
Let me put it this way then. You would be irresponsible enough to lose $100 million.
No, absolutely not.
Me either.
Leave it. There's no chance of that. Hey, last night's game, as we talked about, Randy, got a little bit too interesting in that final inning. In the 10th, after taking a 6-2 lead, the Cardinals nearly coughed it right back up with nobody out and another couple of runs crossing the plate for the Pirates. It was 6-5 in favor of the Cardinals. Nobody out, and Carlos Martinez on the mound. He was struggling in a big, big way. Now, what does Clint Hurdle do with runners at first and second and a pitcher on the ropes? He elects to bunt with Elias Diaz, who, by the way, has 700 plate appearances in his major league career and zero sacrifice bunts. Zero. He's got a few sacrifice flies, but no sack bunts. Take it or leave it, we owe Clint Hurdle a bottle of wine.
Yeah, I'll take that.
And I know, I get the idea. You put the winning run in position to score. But you also gave an out to a guy that was desperately in need of an out. And you're asking a hitter who's not very good to do something he has never done in his major league career, and that's put down a successful bunt.
I will take that, and I'll say that we'll give him two bottles of wine. We'll give him another one for not challenging the play at third.
Yeah, there you go. That's another one. He did not have a great inning last night.
There's
no telling. Maybe they still get the out first and second and the runners don't advance. Or maybe a deep fly out to right field gets that runner from second base over to third. Maybe if you let him swing away, that's the outcome. Mm-hmm. But a really bad call by Clint Hurdle. Thank you.
Big Sis, what do you got for us?
Take it or leave it. Jose is the Martinez with the most value on the Cardinals roster.
Leave it.
I will leave it too.
Not that he's not valuable, but like Brad told us, and like Mike Schilt told the media today, Carlos's job is to get the 27th out. I don't know who the next guy up would be if Carlos Martinez isn't there right now with Hicks injured.
And if you want to look at it from the value standpoint of what you get in return for one of them, Martinez, even though he's struggling and not starting, I think he still gets back for you more than Martinez would in a deal. The Jose Martinez.
Talk some more value, but totally different athletes. Take it or leave it, O.J. Simpson is more valuable in the sports world right now than Pete Rose.
How
do we define that value, though?
Well, if you just want to do it by autograph sales, people lined up in Cooperstown every year and in Vegas to get Pete Rose's autograph. I don't think that people are clamoring for O.J. Simpson's autograph.
Probably cut in line, though.
Oh, yeah, right.
There are some sickos out there that have the mindset, man, I just met a guy who murdered somebody.
Yeah, oh, I know. And it's not
two
like
people.
There are nobody, but it's amazing how people clamor for Pete Rose's autograph.
Yeah.
Take it or leave it, Alex Reyes is in the rotation for the Cardinals next season.
Leave it.
Even if it's for one game?
Okay, if it's for one game,
I'll take it.
But figure that next year, Waka and Waino probably aren't back, right? Martinez probably is back in the rotation. So you've got Martinez, Flaherty, Hudson, Michaelis, and then it's going to be Ponce de Leon. It's going to be Gomber. Mm-hmm. It's going to be Reyes. It's going to be Woodford. Those people that are going to be battling for that spot. Maybe even John Gant.
Take it or leave it. If the Rams were still in St. Louis, they would be starting Mark Sanchez next year.
Yeah, I'll take that.
You know what? I would leave it because the relocation effort would have stalled to the point where there's nowhere for them to go. So now they got to try to win.
Nope. They would have never tried to win here. They were done trying to win.
But it was only to relocate, right? That was the whole purpose.
Yes, it was. To alienate the fan base.
Yeah, you know what? I'll take it. I'll change my answer.
And take it or leave it, Harry Potter is on the Mount Rushmore of movie franchises.
I'd have to see it first.
Yeah, me too.
You guys have
never seen a single Harry Potter.
Randy, I figured your kids would have been like in that perfect time frame for Harry
Potter.
No,
hell
no.
No? No.
Never saw it. I don't know.
So
I'm going to say no.
So that means there are four other ones better, obviously.
And what kind of movies are we talking about?
Movie franchises. The Godfather's got to be up there, right?
Star Wars.
Okay.
Star Trek is up there. It's got a massive following.
Austin Powers.
Probably Lord of the Rings would be bigger than Harry Potter. So, yeah, I think you could easily find four.
Star Trek, really?
Yeah. Star Trek is
huge.
Yeah,
there's
huge.
Been a ton of those.
Yes. Bond is up there.
And what
all
about
the
movies. Avengers movie?
And those two, yeah.
Yeah.
So what about like
the Marvel Universe?
Yeah.
Toy Story? You got all the animated ones too? Shrek?
Yeah. So, and I think you make the argument for Toy Story. I don't think it makes it in front of Harry Potter. But the bottom line is there are a lot of franchises that would take Harry Potter's spot.
I'm with you. Thanks, Big
Sorry, man.
Star Trek.
Oh. Yeah. For real, yo. It is. It's huge. The movies.
Oh, yeah. That's a big thing. Marvel Cinematic Universe worldwide has grossed more than $18 billion. Star Wars 2, Harry Potter 3rd. James Bond 4th, Lord of the Rings 5th, X-Men 6th, Fast and Furious 7th, Jurassic Park 8th. That's in terms of their...
just in revenue.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean they're that good.
No, I agree with that, no doubt. Even though I haven't seen it.
I can tell you right now, it's not good.
Cardinals are the Pirates. Did you know that?
What's that?
Cardinals are the Pirates.
How
in battle tonight in Pittsburgh?
When the hell did that happen?
I was really rushed today trying to come up with this rundown. Oh. So
the Cardinals are the Pirates. Yeah. We'll battle.
I think is that and?
And.
Cardinals and the Pirates.
Oh, because I was really
tonight
confused.
In Pittsburgh. And we're going to catch up with friend of the show and Pirates pitching coach Ray Searidge. He's next on 101 ESPN. Welcome back to the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Chris Ronji, Randy Carricker with you. Brad Thompson is on the call for the Cardinals and Pirates tonight from Pittsburgh. And we get a chance to visit with one of our favorite guests, the Pirates pitching coach and a guy who started his minor league career, signed as a member of the Cardinal organization to start his pro baseball career, Ray Searidge. Ray, always great to have you with us. How you doing?
I'm doing great, and thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, I want to start with this. Since you did start your career with the Cardinal organization, do you have a George Kissel story?
Do I? I'm telling you, it was one day we were in instructional league, and I didn't back up a base, and I caught his ire. And the following day, I was in there at 6 o'clock in the morning, and he was hitting. He had a bucket of balls, and he hit the balls all around the ballpark, and I had to back up every base that I was supposed to with nobody on, with a runner on first. And then after that, I had to go around and pick up the ball. So that really instilled in my mind that I have another job to do after I pitch. And it was to this day, I remember that. And he was just a stickler for fundamentals, which I'm carrying over to my guys.
That's great.
In your career, is that the most you've ever been worn out by somebody who's a superior to you?
Yes. Yes. He was a tremendous, tremendous influence on my life, not only off the field, but on the field. And when he passed, I was so sad to see the way he went. And he was a tremendous, tremendous baseball man and a lot of fun to talk to. And he had so many good stories from way back when, some that I don't even remember at this point in time. But he was definitely a major influence in my baseball life and my personal life, and a very huge mentor to many other people, I would imagine, too.
The Pirates pitching coach, Ray Searidge, in his 10th year as the Pirates pitching coach with us on 101 ESPN. And, Ray, you've got Chris Archer going for your club tonight, and you look at his game by game, he seems to have flipped a switch here and turned things around. A, is that the case, and B, if so, why?
Yeah, Chris, we got back to basics, and that's what we needed to do with him, and I wanted him to be him. He was trying different things that weren't really panning out, and I gave him that leeway because this is a guy who's been around the league, in baseball for a while, American League, and then just recently with us. I gave him a little bit of leeway, probably too much. And then we had a good sit down, and we came to the some standards that it fit for him, and I didn't want him to lose his pitching soul. And it just came to fruition in a couple of starts, and I expect to see the same thing out of him tonight.
And if you look at some of those starts, the usage of the sinker is up. Is that intentional from your side, or is that just something that he is doing along with the catcher?
Well, let me correct you on that. The sinker was up earlier. That was his doing. That was his want to. And that was not prodded by me or anybody on the pitching staff to, tell him to throw that. And then it wasn't working out. And his four-seamer moves enough to act like a two-seamer sometimes, and it has some giddy up and ride at the top of the zone. And, that's what we went back to, his basics. So he's throwing primarily four-seamers. He'll throw some two-seamers in certain situations, but overall he's getting to back to who Chris Archer really is.
Ray, it seems like with pitchers in general, they're always working on something, a new grip, sometimes a different release point. And most of the time, it seems to me, for successful guys, it's best just to stay with what got you there. Our philosophy here in radio is play the hits. And if you're a pitcher, that's the thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. You go out there and you pitch to your strengths, and the hitter's weaknesses. So our biggest thing here is first pitch strikes, pitching in for strikes and for purpose. Also being able to hit the four corners with the fastball in the strike zone, and then able to add and subtract and read swings. So these things that have been a standard for us for so many years, with the analyticals getting involved, it kind of deters away from the good basis, the good foundation of that. And a lot of guys are just starting to pump up top, and, it's not them. They have to be themselves, but use that as a weapon to get the hitter out, to change the eye level, to elevate that fastball at the top of the strike zone.
Ray, I wanted to ask you about some of the changes that have taken place very quickly in the last 5 or 10 years. And one of those seems to me, and you brought this up, you guys pitch inside with a purpose, but it seems like there's a lot of teams out there that don't appreciate that the pitcher is allowed to own the inside part of the plate too. Why has that changed, do you think?
Oh, gosh. It's just they don't – I don't know. I'm going to give you my opinion. They don't like it in there. They want to get extension. They want things a little bit easier, but we're not going that route. We've been this way since I've been here, pitching in. And I remember way back when I was with Tampa Bay in AA, where I had a bunch of Florida State League guys coming up to the AA, the Southern League, and they pitched away the whole time because down in the Florida State League, you know, you got the spring training ballparks that are big, and, you know, the balls that were crushed didn't go really travel that far. So I got them in AA and a pitch inside, and that's been my philosophy for the whole time is make the hitter feel uncomfortable in there. Don't let him lean out over the plate. Look for that fastball away or fastball middle. You know, you got to make sure that he is aware that you're going to come in and move him off the plate. So this way you own the inner half, the inner third of home plate, but you also protect the down and away pitch too.
And if your guys are doing it right, it is incredibly effective, but it also can be dangerous because it, you know, the ball might get away from them at times, yeah. And then you end up putting somebody on base. So how do you balance that challenge with them? Because you want them to go inside, but you don't want them to get too far inside that they're hitting guys and then loading up the bases or whatever.
You know, we take that with a grain of salt. You know, it's not that we're doing it on purpose. It's just that the more times you do pitch inside and the more reps you get, the more comfortable you're going to be and the more confident that you're going to be able to execute that pitch. But if you don't try, how do you know what you're going to do? So we continue to harp on that. We work on it in spring training. We work on it in the pens. Or if guys do touch and feels down here, like the bullpen guys, we do little things like that to make sure that they can build that confidence up to get that pitch inside, to make sure that you get it and make that hitter feel uncomfortable.
Ray Searidge, the Pirates pitching coach, with us on 101 ESPN. As hitters have adapted and gone to launch angle, and it's basically strikeouts or home runs for the most part here, how have you as a pitching staff had to adapt?
You know, we use that information. You know, we don't want to live by the information and change our whole personality when we're out there on the bump. What is your strength? What gets you out? What forces weak contact from the hitter is getting ahead with your strength. Then we know we got the numbers and everything where we could go when we're ahead in the count. There are some things where you're going to have to go up at the top right off the get-go, and you could count them on one hand sometimes. But overall, you know, I want them to get ahead with their first pitch strikes, with their strengths. If it's a situation where you have to elevate the fastball, we will elevate the fastball early in the count. But, you know, it's a chess game, and you got to play it, and you got to think about one step ahead of your opponent up there at the plate because he wants to hit the ball hard and small somewhere, and we've got to make sure that he's not comfortable in doing so.
As Randy mentioned earlier, you've had this job for a long time, and a lot of things have changed in baseball over that span. Mm-hmm. Analytics is one of those things that pretty much every team is into now. Well, I mean, they're all into it, but to different degrees. How has that changed for you and how much you use it with your players?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's been a little bit of a struggle, I'll be honest with you. But, you know, I have to be, as the old saying, a little bit of rock and roll and a little bit of country. And I tried to use the information and how it will apply to each individual pitcher that's out there on the bump. And in the beginning, I was, a little hesitant. But as I learned and find out that I could take this part, I could take that part, and I can infuse it into this pitcher, and then help him even become better, then I'll use it. But I don't want to get too heavy into that because if you get too much information with these guys, you end up freezing them upstairs. And, you know, and then the instincts and the conviction behind the pitch doesn't always come through. So I got to make sure that I approach it and present it in a way that you could do this and you could do that, and have that information from the analytical department so this way we can marry them, both of them, you know.
Ray, as we've watched the Pirates for a few years, Jameson Taillon seemed like he was ascending. That's a guy that you really miss. Hasn't made a start since May 1st and probably out until next month. He is a force that is missing for you guys, isn't he?
Yes, he is. But, you know, him being in the dugout, he is priceless. He gives information. Guys talk to him all the time. This guy gets it. At a young age, he figured it out. He was one of those guys that was born to pitch. We'll just try to help him get through this situation that he's in right now, get him healthy, and we'll take one day at a time and see how he progresses that way. But J-Mo is a guy that's out there who is a competitor, who prepares himself for the game, knows every situation and what he wants to do, and he goes about his business and does it. It is a big void, but we have to move on. You know, we have to keep on going forward, and then somebody else is going to have to step up and for him.
Before we started this season, we talked a lot about the possibility it was going to be a really tough division. It has proven to be close, and it's the tightest division by far of anybody else in baseball. Did you think it was going to go this way?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. I knew that we had one of the toughest divisions in baseball because, you know, with obviously with St. Louis, it's always a blood and guts game. Same thing with the Cubs, the Brewers, you know, even the Reds. You know, they've got a pretty good pitching staff, and the hitters, you know, they got a pretty good lineup all throughout this whole division. And we're nothing too shabby at either. We never give up. This team has got resiliency out there, and they just keep on coming at you because you think we're going to roll over. We don't. And that's the same thing with every other team in our division. It's going to be the drag-out, knockdown fight. And whoever makes the less mistakes is probably going to come out ahead.
How do you and Clint Hurdle get your players, not just your pitchers, Ray, but your players to be so relentless? Because I've noticed that. You're a team, it doesn't matter if it's late August and you're nine games out. Your team is still playing hard and they're still a tough out.
Well, it's Clint's message, and it filters all the way through to the coaching staff and the players. They know that, you know, okay, we lost yesterday against you guys 6-5, but we gave you a hunt that, you know, you guys are up against the wall there. One little base hit right here, we might still be playing. But, you know, it comes from the skipper. And he said that since spring training for all the years that I've been here. And it filters down all the way through, even to the minor leagues. You know, you never give up the ship. You keep on fighting until the last out's recorded. And that's one thing we do. And it all comes from Clint Hurdle.
You know, over the weekend, you had that series against the Phillies, and there was a stupid moment where a guy just walked onto the field casually.
Oh.
And then he, yeah. You know, your players are in the field at the moment. The Phillies are batting, and they look over, and they see him, and they just kind of – it looked like they were scared. Like, what is this dude doing? He's just walking up to us, and they all kind of moved away. When you saw that happening, what were you thinking?
I was like this is a strange moment, you know, because this never happens in Pittsburgh. You know, this guy just happened to get through a crack, and all of a sudden he's on the field. And the first initial thought that came across some of our minds was it was the grounds crew guy telling or going up to the umpire because the guy was carrying a phone, going up to the umpire and saying, okay, we might be getting a thunderbunder here coming, you know, with some rain. And then all of a sudden we took a look at him, and it was some wackadoodle that came down from the stands and just walked out on the field. And, you know, it's very seldom that thing happens here in Pittsburgh because our security guards are so right on top of stuff. But it just caught us in a moment that we relax. And, the umpire moved away because you don't know about these people. You don't know what their intent
right.
is. You know, you don't want to attack him or tackle him. You don't know what he's got. You know, and in the state of the world, it is today, you can't trust that person that walks out on the field. But it was totally taken by shock. We hardly ever seen that.
Ray Searidge, I want to get one more opinion from you because I value your opinion, and it's an ongoing conversation. I wrote about it at our website over the weekend about closers, and I loved seeing Lee Smith and Rivera. We knew Rivera was going to go in. I was glad to see Lee go in. But you've had a lot of different guys in your 10 years there that have been successful uh-huh. closers for the Pirates. There are people outside the game that think that anybody can get the 27th out. I've never talked to a pitcher who said, oh, yeah, anybody can get the 27th out. Since you since you have had guys that have had success doing that, what do
yeah.
you think?
No, you got to be a special person to be in that ninth inning and in that safe situation right there. You've got to have mental fortitude. You've got to have strength, and you can't panic. And you stick with your plan, and you stay aggressive all the way through. And, you know, Mark Melance and Jason Grilli, Felipe Vasquez, these guys have got those. And Joel Hanrahan, these guys have got that ability to just like, okay, I need to make pitches, get outs, and that's it. Sometimes a lot of people go out there, pitch not to lose. And our guys go out there, pitch to win. And it's a whole different mindset that you got going on upstairs. And it takes a very special person to have that. And that's why they're so, so precious and so valuable to a team once you got a guy like that.
So when we were talking about the analytics earlier, some of the hardliners, when it comes to the advanced metrics, will say, don't save your closer for the very end. You know, sometimes the game situation is in the seventh or the eighth inning, and that might be the ball game right there before you even get a chance to use your best reliever. Do you think that if pitchers were raised from the moment they get into professional baseball at the lowest levels of the minor leagues to just be ready for anything, and if you're the closer, it doesn't matter what inning you pitch in. Do you think that they would be able to overcome that mental hurdle, or is it always going to be there for the ninth inning?
No, you know, that's a very interesting subject right there, and I think it's got some validity to it. If you bring in guys when the game is on the line, especially like you said, there might be situations in the sixth or the seventh inning where the game is on the line, and you prepare them for that type of situation up here in the ninth inning. So, yeah, I think it's a great idea. And to tell you the truth, when I was with Milwaukee and Tony Muser was the manager in AAA, and I got sent down, he used me in the sixth inning and to stop the rally and to close out the sixth inning. And I went into him after the game, and I go, why did you use me so early? And he goes, because the game was on the line, and that's why I put you in there. And it gave me a different outlook. I was like, wow, that's cool. That's different, you know? So, yeah, I think there's a lot of validity to it, big time.
So do you ever go to Clint and say, hey, let's get Vasquez in here in the seventh?
No, I'm not going to do that up here in the major leagues because we got guys that can do that. You know, they've been in pressure situations like a Richie Rodriguez, Liriano, you know, they can handle that spot. So we go with what we got right now.
Hey, Ray, we always appreciate you taking time with us, and we love watching your team play. Thanks so much for your time, and good luck the rest of the way.
Thanks for having me, guys. Really a pleasure.
Pirates pitching coach Ray Searidge with us on 101 ESPN. We're going to talk more pitching coming up as Giovanni Gallegos is figuring things out on the hill thanks to one of his dominant pitches. We're going to talk about the Cardinals staff with Joe Schwarz of The Athletic next on 101 ESPN. BT is out today. It's Ronge and Randy with you, and we head now to the Brown and Crouppen Celebrity Line, and our friend Joe Schwarz from The Athletic, kind enough to spend some time with us. He has a great piece up about Giovanni Gallegos at The Athletic, and you should check that out. Joe, always good to have you with us on the show. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm a little upset that BT's not there, but I guess he just can't handle my analysis.
That's exactly right.
He left town just because of it.
Yeah.
So I want to ask about Gallegos because we can make the argument that he has been the most effective Cardinal reliever this season. Why has he been so effective in your opinion?
Well, honestly, it's really interesting with his repertoire. He throws primarily two pitches. He throws a four-seamer and he throws a slider. But when he throws that slider, it's really two versions of it. One of them breaks to his glove side like you normally see from a slider. And then the other one breaks to his arm side, which is more of like some people like to view it as a changeup or they like to view it as a screwball, but he throws it as a slider. That's why it is still classified as one. And I think hitters just have a tough time picking that up. And if they do pick it up, they're thinking it's going to break to the glove side and then it breaks to the arm side and they're swinging and missing at it more than there's only five relievers that have a higher swing and miss rate on against their slider.
So with the Cardinals in a position they're in now, they want Carlos Martinez to be the closer. We've seen the difficulty he can have in that position. So while he's one of their best pitchers, and you could argue he's still their best if he's healthy, maybe that's not the position for him. Should Gallegos do it, or is there somebody else you like in that role?
I like Gallegos in that role, but as you guys were speaking with Ray Searidge earlier, sometimes pitchers aren't built for that role. Unfortunately, We don't really have enough wiggle room to learn if Giovanni Gallegos is built for that role, being a game and a half back and just a half a game up on the Brewers. But I think with what we have seen from Carlos Martinez and some of the struggles that we've seen, obviously he's still nailing it down. In finality, he's getting the job done, but he's not doing very well in getting the job done. I think you got to give Gallegos a shot, especially with what you said. He's been the best reliever for the Cardinals, and he's been able to perform to a point where we're kind of forgetting about that Luke Voit trade now because he has been producing for the big league club.
Did you see this coming with Gallegos?
If you look back at my tweets on the day of the trade, way back whenever that occurred, I didn't know anything about Giovanni Gallegos, so I'm not going to act like I was some crystal ball type person. But I looked at how many swings and misses he was getting at the minor league level. The performance wasn't the ERA and the FIP wasn't exactly there, but he was still striking out a ton of batters at the minor league level, and that was something that I got excited about. And I think if for the listeners out there that are looking at minor leaguers and trying to project them out to be a major leaguer, if you look at their strikeout rate and you see how high it is, there is a good chance that they will have at least some success at the big league level. Maybe not Giovanni Gallegos success, but that is a good precursor for future success.
I know it was one of the criticisms we had of the Cardinals as a pitching staff is that maybe the strikeout rate isn't exactly where it needs to be. Have things gotten better? Have they stabilized as far as you can tell?
Honestly, not really. But I've looked into Dakota Hudson because Dakota Hudson is kind of where you look in terms of is the strikeout rate where it needs to be. And he's not even getting it up to where I think he could get it to. But I think it's one of those situations where he's going to always outperform the projections, I feel, because he's able to get the ground balls. He's able to limit. I mean, he just allowed a home run for the first time the other start in a long time. The strikeout rate isn't where it needs to be, and that's largely because Dakota – or where you would expect it to be, largely because of Dakota Hudson, also because Miles Michaelis. But I think if they're limiting the contact quality, which they have been, they're going to outperform what you'd expect from them. And that's what we've been seeing because you can't complain about the starting rotation in the last month or so. It's largely been the offense, which is slowly looks like it's coming around maybe.
Joe Schwarz of The Athletic with us on 101 ESPN. You can follow Joe on Twitter at STL Cup of Joe. And you tweeted today that you don't think that the Cardinals should pursue a relief. Well, let me read the tweet from you. Don't jump into this year's reliever market the way it presently stands, especially with Helsley waiting in the wings. What makes you like Ryan Helsley better than the other options that you could get in a trade?
Well, let me clarify that. I like Ryan Helsley as a starting pitcher, but I don't see the Cardinals moving him into the starting rotation this year. I think that's largely to do with some of the health problems he had earlier and some of the health problems he had last year. But why do I like him? Because I think I'm basically, and I think Ranji, and I think you would both agree with me, if you've got a pitcher that is able to be a successful starting pitcher at the major league level, they're also most likely going to be a successful relief pitcher too, especially when you have basically fireman stuff in what Ryan Helsley has. He's got an incredible fastball. He's got two or three variations of his breaking ball, and he's got a changeup that probably would be scrapped if he became a reliever. So it's one of those things. You're taking what I believe to be an above-average starting pitcher in the future, and you're bringing him into the bullpen, and he's going to be successful. And he's only proven that when he's been given the opportunity at the major league level out of the bullpen, he has been successful.
Is there anybody, and maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves here with this question because there's still a lot of time to play in 2019, but is there somebody that you would like to see get more innings, get more work, just so we can get an idea of who they are going into next year?
Junior Fernandez, 100%. I think what he's done at the Double-A level, at the Triple-A level, I think it's to a point where, and again, this is some of the things that I say makes it look like I'm looking past 2019, and I'm not, because there's arms that they're calling up, like a guy like Mike Myers, who took the place of Chasen Shreve today because he's healthy now. I think right now, Junior Fernandez has more ability as a effective major league. We've already seen what Mike Myers does. Peak level Mike Myers, he's an average relief pitcher. Peak Junior Fernandez, I think he could be a superstar as a reliever. We are getting ahead of ourselves a little bit. We're looking out to 2020, but when you look out to 2020, if you think they can be effective in 2019, that's just as important in getting them into the playoffs this year too.
And that's a perfect example of a guy that the Cardinals looked at as a starter and then turned it on once he became a relief pitcher. And so many times you have to find a guy's role. And Fernandez, even though he's young, has been in the system for a while. But once they put him in the bullpen is when he started pitching at a high level.
Yeah, and the knock on Junior Fernandez as a starter was he has too good of stuff, too good of a repertoire to have such a low strikeout rate. And when he was a starting pitcher, I don't know what it was. I haven't been able to look into it that much, but he was not able to strike out hitters at the rate that you'd expect with a 96-mile-an-hour fastball and with breaking ball and an absolutely dirty changeup. But they've put him in, they've inserted him into the bullpen role this year, and that strikeout rate has skyrocketed. So it's been quite a revelation, and I think it's a revelation that needs to get a shot at the big league level. Yes, he's not. I don't believe he's on the 40-man. He needs to get on the 40-man, but there are totally positions that are moves, transactions that can be made to get him on the 40-man to be able to be at the big league level.
What's behind Andrew Miller's improvement?
I mean, it's the slider. I mean, the problem with Andrew Miller has always been, at least the problem, if you look back at every single home run he allowed, it was just a hanging slider. And unfortunately, when you're the nature of the beast of throwing a slider and using the slider as your out pitch is you are going to throw a few what's called cement mixers, and you just hope that hitters aren't able to capitalize on it. Unfortunately, hitters have capitalized on it this year, and I think lefties have 4 or 5 home runs off of them already. So what do I think has happened now recently is he's just become more consistent with the pitch. And as I just tweeted before joining you guys, there are only 3 pitchers out there with a higher strikeout rate versus lefties this year. And what did the Cardinals sign Andrew Miller for was to strike out left-handed hitters, and he's doing exactly that.
Joe Schwarz of The Athletic with us on 101 ESPN. One more thing from me. As you watch, and you have a pretty good idea now of what this starting rotation is, as you watch this group, can you foresee them becoming more efficient and getting deeper into games?
I don't know. I thought we were going to start seeing that with Jack Flaherty until his last start happened. Miles Michaelis, I feel like he's always able to get 5 or 6 or 7. I don't know. I really don't, because I think a lot of what Dakota Hudson and a lot of what Jack Flaherty are doing is they're not really trusting their stuff just yet. We've got a pitcher in Adam Wainwright who does not have the stuff he's ever had in his career, and he's out there throwing 6 to 7 innings to start. So it's going to be a thing where I think – those pitchers need to just talk to Adam Wainwright and see what he's doing and be able to change their approach a little bit, because what they're doing right now is not going to work for the full season, especially with the Cardinals talked about the depth at the starting rotation. I don't see that depth right now. I really don't. That is why I am totally a proponent of seeking out another starting pitcher going forward, because I don't see the depth if any of these 5 starters begin to falter.
Is there – all right, so if they do make a trade, it's probably going to hurt as far as what they have to give up in order to make it happen. Are there guys you're willing to part with that would be attractive for other teams and enough to get something done?
The only guy that I think really possesses any immediate impact – trade value right now is Tyler O'Neill. And the only problem you have there is you don't know about Marcell Ozuna. And even if when he does become healthy again, you don't know what type of force he's going to be, especially what we've seen from Tyler O'Neill. Is Tyler O'Neill enough? Probably not. But I do think there are some lower-level prospects that they could throw in to the deal in order to make that a little sweeter. Now, I'm the wrong person to ask for that. That's more of a Mark Saxon type question. But I do think that starting a deal with Tyler O'Neill as a headliner could get a starting pitcher that could, a rental starting pitcher that could eat innings the rest of the way, a la Mike Minor.
Oh, you were talking about Adam Wainwright just a little bit ago, and we were talking about his splits home and away and why there's such a difference. Why do you think that is? Is it just as simple as park factors?
I think that's part of it. I think he's always – I mean, but pitching in Busch Stadium is really a dream for any pitcher all across baseball. So I think a big part of it is Busch Stadium. And then I think the other part is it's just a little bit of a fluke. I think Adam Wainwright, I don't think he loses the spin on his curveball, and I know that he doesn't. He doesn't lose the spin on his curveball on the road. I think it's just an easier park to pitch in St. Louis, and I think we're enjoying the benefits so far.
Joe, great stuff as always. Thanks for your time. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and hopefully the Cardinals can get on a little bit of a run here.
That'd be great. That is Joe Schwarz from The Athletic on 101 ESPN. Coming up, we've all been there. The family goldfish dies, and then you have to flush it down the toilet. But there may be another option. That's next. Before, with all due respect on 101 ESPN.